This is Intersection. I'm Matthew Petty. WMFE is celebrating the US Constitution this month. Later in the show, you'll hear the entire Constitution read by staff at WMFE and members of the community. We're going to start, though, with a closer look at why the Constitution matters and some of the constitutional battles playing out today and likely to play out in the future. Wiyang Nagav is an Associate Professor of Law at Barry University in Orlando. One of her specialties is constitutional law. Thank you so much for coming back, Yang.
It's my pleasure.
We're also joined by Aubrey Jewett, Professor of Political Science at the University of Central Florida and a regular contributor to Intersection. Thank you for being here as well, Aubrey.
Glad to be here.
Yang, most Americans have at least a basic understanding of the Constitution, right? What it is and why it's important. So why does the Constitution matter?
Well, right now we see the Constitution affecting our daily lives, and then there are more nuances of the Constitution that most of the American public is not exposed to. But it's so important because the Constitution and the structure of the Constitution, at its very core and essence, with the checks and balances, helps to protect the people. And so when you see the political struggle between the branches, ultimately, that is the Constitution at play, in that the Constitution is protecting the people. So the struggle between the branches isn't to keep one branch in check merely to sustain the power of the other branch, but ultimately it's designed for us. And mm-hmm. For the people and obviously our rights as protected in the amendments. And so it has impact in our daily lives.
Aubrey Jewett, you'll hear a lot of elected officials talking about the importance of the Constitution as they shepherd laws through Congress or argue against legislation they don't like. But do you get the sense that the Constitution is something where everyone agrees on what it says and what it means?
Well, I think most people agree on what it says when they read the language of it, but almost nobody agrees on what it means if you're a Democrat and Republican these days. They often have drastically different views as to how the Constitution should be applied and what kind of protection should be given and that sort of thing. Whether it's free speech or, say, the right to bear arms, let's just take that one, the Second Amendment. For about 200 years, that was perhaps one of the articles or amendments that generated the most controversy as far as what it meant. People could read it, a well-regulated militia being essential to the security of a free state, the rights of the people to bear arms shall not be infringed. More or less, that's what it says. So you could say, okay, that's what it says, but what did it mean, for people who wanted more gun control and thought that, and still think perhaps that gun ownership in America is a real problem? They would say, hey, that was a right that was tied to the militia. It's not necessarily an individual right. Whereas people who were very pro-gun, pro-Second Amendment would say, oh, no, just like most of the other things in the Bill of Rights, the first 10 amendments, the Second Amendment is also an individual right. Well, the courts for about 200 years or so didn't weigh in on it, and they finally did about a decade ago and made it clear that for the most part that Second Amendment does protect an individual's right to bear arms, mm-hmm. Although they also said that it's certainly reasonable regulations were allowed, just like reasonable regulations on, say, speech are allowed or religious conduct are allowed in some cases as well. So bottom line is, yeah, most people don't agree, particularly in the political sphere, about what it means when they're on different ideological sides or partisan sides.
Yang, I want to sort of punt that back to you and say, kind of where do you see the spectrum of arguments? I mean, it does seem like now we're in a moment of crisis in some cases, and people are looking at this document and saying we really need to interrogate what it stands for. But is this anything new? As Professor Jewett says, this is just something that has kind of been there from the get-go.
What's interesting is that I agree with Professor Jewett in terms of the level argumentation may have always been there, but it's more present with the media coverage and people's access. But what's really interesting is how the arguments on the Constitution has turned. And so I think the American public is using the Constitution now more than ever as a sword. For instance, instance, there was a recent Supreme Court case about bakers and whether you can refuse to bake a cake for LGBT couples. And what's interesting through that case is that it used to be that the First Amendment was used as a shield, that the government can't interfere with your First Amendment religious free speech rights. And now what's interesting is that, such as in that litigation, you've got plaintiffs using it as a sword to say that although there is this mandate, you're violating my First Amendment rights. And so an interesting observation is how now the Constitution's being used.
Mm-hmm. Talk, if you could, a little bit about some of the strengths and weaknesses of this Constitution. I mean, it strikes me, and I think in conversation with you before we got on air, you were saying that this is kind of a short document. I mean, it's a very big and complex country, obviously, but the U.S. Constitution isn't very long when you think about it.
It isn't. 4,400 words, very short, as compared to, for instance, the state constitution, 50,000 words, right? So 10 times more words in our state constitution. And the brevity of it lends to its strength. You've got a pristine document as opposed to the Florida Constitution, which appears a little more cluttered and seems to be a kitchen sink. A lot of the Florida constitutional amendments perhaps would have been better placed as statutory law rather than in our Constitution. And so what's great about our Constitution is you can see it as the supreme law of the land because it's not cluttered. Mm-hmm. So the brevity of it lends to its strength. At the same time, it lends to its weakness because it's so short. There's a tremendous amount of ambiguity, which then is left to the courts to interpret. Or you have instances where you've got the tension between the branches because of the ambiguity, and it never makes it to the courts because the branches don't carry out the struggle further where it would reach to the courts. So the ambiguity is problematic because the criticism is the Constitution what the latest administration thinks it is or the latest composition of the courts? Does that make the Constitution?
Aubrey Jewett, just thinking about the Florida Constitution, I wonder if you what you think of Professor Nagav's assessment there. Is it kind of like a kitchen sink? Like there's a lot of words in there, as she says, and it's a kind of a catch-all and maybe too large and cumbersome?
Generally, yes, I agree with all of that. When I teach my Florida politics class, we have a chapter on the Constitution and spend a week or two on it. And, yeah, I highlight all those differences, that the Florida Constitution is much longer and it's a lot more detailed. And a lot of it is because we put many, many specific policies into the Florida Constitution. Some of them were put in back in 1968. When our current version of the Florida Constitution was put into play when the public voted for it. But a lot of it has been added over the years, sometimes by the legislature, more often by interest groups who seek to constitutionalize their policy preferences. Basically, that's just a big word that says, you know, they have a preferred policy, and rather than putting it in statute or because they can't get the legislature to put it in statute, they just enshrine it in the Florida Constitution. You know, they get an initiative petition going, they get the signatures, and they get it on the ballot. And up until about a decade ago, then you only had to get 50% of the public to go along with you. Now it's a little more difficult. You got to get 60%. But if you can get that, then you can kind of lock it in there. And a lot of why Florida's Constitution is so long is because of all those very specific policy pronouncements. And so, for instance, you know, medical marijuana being legalized just recently or coming up on the ballot, the public will have a chance to vote on raising the minimum wage to $15. So we have a lot of those specific things in there.
And coming up, we'll talk more with Associate Professor of Law Yang Nagov and Political Science Professor Aubrey Jewett about how the impeachment hearing is shining a spotlight on the Constitution and the role of the Supreme Court in constitutional interpretation. Intersections back in a minute.